Hey, this is your Olympic hero, Kurt Angle, and you're listening to Snug Wrestling. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
All right, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to Snug Wrestling. I am Edgar. I am your host. The crew is here with me once again, Mr. Blood Toxic, Tommy, and BT Knight. We're going to go over the first Friday Night SmackDown after WrestleMania. This is a brand new chapter, a brand new start in the WWE right after Mania. So we got a lot of new shit happening, exciting stuff happening, and we're getting started with this new era, new year, new season of WWE with a fucking bang, man. We had a crazy main event in a triple threat TLC match. Aleister Black is back. Nia Jax is back. We got a new debuting tag team from NXT. Fraxxium had won a hell of a tag team match. And so much more. But we're going to get started with the opening segment. The new real champion, the final champion, John Cena, opened up the show. And he made sure that he got the proper announcement as the greatest of all time. He made sure that the ring announcer said that perfectly. But right before John Cena was going to get a word in, here comes Randy Orton. And this was basically like the setup for their match for Backlash in St. Louis, which is going to take place on May 10th. And on this segment, this promo battle that these two had, Randy Orton set up the challenge to to John Cena. And it is official. These two are going to face each other at Backlash. But right before that, they had some really, really interesting things to say. John and Randy know each other from way, way back, 25 years. History between these two guys. They know each other real well. Randy made some really deep personal comments to John Cena. John Cena fired back. It was one hell of a segment. I wasn't expecting these guys to say the things that they said to each other, but it was really fun to see. I'm excited for what we're going to see from now until Backlash from Randy and John Cena. I thought this was a great way to kick off this feud, but let's hear what you guys think about this thing with John Cena and Randy Orton. Go ahead, Mr. Blood.
I'm just going to say what everybody else is probably already thinking. This promo on its own was already better than all three promos Cody and John had put together. I genuinely think so. And it's because even though Cody and John go like way back, they never really interacted that often on Cody's original run. I believe I saw a meme, or one of the guys posted a meme in the chat the other day that showed that in WWE history and lore, Cody is 0-4 against John Cena. So Cody's versed him in every, it was Tommy. So Cody's versed John in every iteration of his characters, his originals, you know, from Legacy to Dashing to Undashing to Stardust and even, the American Nightmare. But this, I don't know what it was, this promo, it's almost like because we've seen John Cena versus Randy Orton so many times to the point where at one point the fans at nauseam were sick of seeing these two together. And I think it's because of the amount of history they have on WWE TV, and because the fans do know how close in real life these guys are behind the scenes, that this just felt so much more personal than anything Cody and John were ever even able to possibly bring up or even, you know, fabricate or tell the truth about. I mean, these guys, 25 years, they were in the same OVW class together. They both debuted in 2002 back-to-back from each other in that awesome 2002 lineup of Brock Lesnar and Batista and Randy Orton and John Cena. I mean, what a year of debuts, because these are all massive stars. But these two, their war of words, I was hanging off at every word, even though it's a 20 fucking 1 minute segment, and it took almost until minute 7 to minute 8 for the first word to get said. I wanted it to go longer because I felt like John was on top form here. Like, literally going after the fans in the smartest way, picking on a dad and a six-year-old son a few rows over off camera. And he kept going back to them with this kind of out-of-pocket, like, ferocity toward them. Like this, like he was like attacking them over and over again. And I was like, damn, John's going in. Like he's peeling the heel back. And it's funny because I saw an interview from Ariel Helwani the other day where he said he doesn't buy John Cena as a bad guy, as a heel, because when he sees John Cena being a heel, he can't help but feel that John's playing a part, because we know just how genuinely good of a dude John actually is. But here in this promo, I was like, bro, he's going all in. He's calling this kid's dad a loser. He's calling the kid a loser. He's going after this guy dressed up like Jack Black for being old and decrepit and saying this is all his life is worth. I mean, Randy bringing up the Make-A-Wish kids, saying that like he knows that that meant something to John, and John's trying to act like none of these fans ever mattered, that he would have gotten where he was with or without them, is really the best part of this character, where he spent the entirety of his career pandering to the fans to get them on his side. And here he is finally realizing that, you know, in his mind, the fans never mattered. He would have always have been successful, because half of them always hated him, but the back was always pushing him anyway. So I thought that when it boiled down to the best part of the promo where John is just going after Randy and saying, you know what, I'm going to destroy three generations of wrestling. I'm going to destroy your legacy. And the way that Randy was also on top form, his acting, the slow burning from friendly to understanding to confused to frustrated and then into rage. And if there's one thing Randy's great at portraying, it's rage. The vein popping, the throbbing, the head, his face gets red. And when he got in John's face like that and said, this company has been providing for me since I came out of the womb. It's going to provide for my kids and my families until the day they put me 6 feet in the ground. How dare you say that to me after everything we've been through? I thought this was top fucking tier television. Easily the best promo John has been involved in my opinion, in the last 5 years of his career that he's popped in and out. And I thought that Randy showed more emotion and more, and he always shows emotion, but I thought this was some of the best promo work from Randy since his feud with Edge in the pandemic era, when they were in the freaking Thunderdome. This was top fucking tier. And even if we don't get John next week to sell this for May 10th, this is the only promo I need.
Shout out to AR15, who's in the comments. Cena cooked Orton and Psychopath Randy coming soon. As much as this promo I thought was really good, I sense a lot of similarities with this promo with Randy compared to the promos that Cena did with Cody Rhodes, as far as like, you're just like everyone else and you're like them and, you know, things along those lines. But this promo was absolutely amazing, I thought too. But Toxic, what did you think about it?
I thought it was an amazing promo. I'm excited to see Randy and John go back at it one more time, but I don't think it's going to be one more time. I think we're going to get two matches out of this. But that's just the thing about Randy and John in the ring together. You know that the match is going to be so good that they have to run it back. It's like you want to see more of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, man. I'd be down to see that. At first, when I found out that Randy Orton came out to attack Cena, I was like, oof, I don't know, too soon. But after seeing the promo tonight, I want to see more of it for sure. I'd be down to see more matches between these two. But yeah, Tommy, let's go with you.
Okay, so boys, give me like a nod or something. When this tour was announced, was Randy not one of the first names that came to your head?
Yeah, for sure.
Because of that rivalry and how big that rivalry was in the past, we knew as soon as this tour was announced, that they had to run it back at some point. They just truly did. And what better place to do it than in Randy Orton's backyard of St. Louis? And you would think, oh, it's a little bit too soon. I'm sorry, but this man is about to have only 20-day reign. I'm calling it now, 2 weeks in advance. I'm going with Randy.
Damn, that's there's crazy.
So much there. And the fact that Cena brought up, yes, I am 17. You are 14. 14 time. And once I take this home with me, yes, you will eventually get another one, but your count starts back at one. So he said that, and I'm just like, well, that is unless you have a 20-day reign.
I definitely see where your head's at with this, Tommy. I mean, it is Randy's hometown. Randy has been beating people left and right. I can definitely see Randy winning, but I don't know. It's crazy.
Have 26 appearances left after tonight. Mm-hmm. We have 26 remaining. And I still have this feeling that at some point the WWE title is not the only title he's getting. Still determined that he will eventually get the one title that has yet to be in his grasp.
The IC title, right?
Toxic is holding up the Intercontinental.
Right.
Just like with Sheamus, I've said this time and time and time again, the Intercontinental title is the only title out of everything that has yet to be in his grasp.
So you're thinking John Cena versus Dom?
Yeah.
He's
had an amazing spot with Ray. Why not move on to his kid too?
Really quick, my only thing about the IC title for John, he's on SmackDown and that title's on Raw. And if he's the champion when the draft comes, he won't get drafted because he's the champion. So how do we get him over to Raw for that title?
We have him lose in St. Louis.
Well,
fair.
I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, you guys. We still got, what, 10, 15 days, 20 days until Backlash? And
it's 2 weeks from...
Yeah, so...
I mean, I'm predicting he retains through shenanigans, but that's just me.
Right. I mean, we're going to do a prediction episode at some point, too, I bet. But as far as this promo goes, I believe they're telling the story. You know, John Cena still has his plan to ruin wrestling and wants to ruin Randy's family's history in professional wrestling.
One of my favorite moments with this was when Randy went, Cena, do you have kids? And Cena's response was, do you really want to know why I don't have kids? It's because I've been raising yours for half a century, for a quarter of a century.
Yeah, Randy Orton gave John Cena that perfect setup right there to just fucking go balls to the walls, healing on everyone, and just say, you know, basically Randy just told Cena, okay, here you go. Go talk shit to kids. Talk shit about the kids. Go be heel John Cena. And it was fucking perfect. John Cena was like, I have been raising.
And all of that. No.
Yes. I have been raising your kids for the past 25 years. I've been, you know, teaching that kid right there in the front row. And it was just, oh my God, I popped so big. But BT.
Better parent than y'all will ever be.
Yes, dude. Yes. It was, oh my God. It was so brutal, but it was lovely at the same time. BT, was this a segment that you were able to catch?
Yes, I was able to watch all the clips for this, and 10 out of 10 segment between John and Randy. As always, one of the biggest rivalries in WWE history. Their history says it. itself that it's going to be a big match at Backlash. But John's fucking beating Randy. Anybody who thinks that Randy's beating John is a fucking idiot. At this point, it's way too early for John to lose. Because he still needs to ruin professional wrestling so that every single one of us spoiled little brats known as WWE fans can get it through our thick skulls that we are spoiled and we don't appreciate anything. And honestly, I have fallen into that boat millions of fucking times. We have been so selfish that we nitpick and we fucking try to, you know, get our way out of it. You know what I mean? So I think John still needs to be champion no matter what anybody tells me. So
the craziest thing about that shit, we've all been talking about who was going to beat Cody. How is John going to beat Cody? This and that. But no one's really asked themselves who, because we know Randy hadn't beaten him. It's too soon. But who legitimately is John dropping that title to between now and December? That's the real fucking crazy question about all this. It's going to be feud after feud with potential contenders. And one of these times, they're going to swerve us. And the person that we don't think is going to do it is going to do it. And that's the crazy part that I'm excited about. Can we agree on that?
You know who's the first name that popped to mind?
CM Punk?
No, he's on Raw.
That's true.
Drew McIntyre.
I wouldn't hate it.
Can you imagine?
But you said CM Punk's on Raw.
Yeah.
The draft.
Fuck the draft. I hope they don't do it. All right, you guys. BT, anything else you want to add about this segment?
Him going at the father and the 6-year-old kid made me piss myself laughing. Like, this is a new John Cena that we have not seen in years. Like, even Doctor of Thuganomics wouldn't have stooped that low.
Yeah, that was some fucking wild shit, man. I was like, oh my God, they really went there.
Make the shirt.
Yeah, who's going to make the John Cena? Make the shirt. Who's gonna be the first to make the John Cena is my father shirt? I'm surprised that the crowd in the arena didn't start chanting, you know, he's our father or something stupid like that. Like, I would have loved that.
I already saw a meme because TikTok's quick. I already saw a meme that said John Cena is the father. And it was a picture of a black kid. And he goes, he's my father because I've never been able to see him.
No. Oh my God.
Yo.
That's foul, bro.
That's taking it to a whole nother level right there.
He was the dad that went to go get that carton of milk and pack of cigarettes.
Oh my God. 4 years ago. He's our father.
Hey, by the way, when you guys were saying who could take the title off of John, what if Cody was to get it back? Because I saw a reel on Instagram about them saying that they weren't mad at the John Cena and Cody Rhodes finish. They thought it was decent. And I'm like, you're a fucking idiot. And then he said, let me finish my statement. Cody Rhodes will get the title back. And I'm like, how is he going to get it back? When he comes back, he's going to be more savage, right? At least we hope so. He said that at some point, Cody and John might face each other at Madison Square Garden, where Dusty won the title years ago, and they were going to correct that wrong. And I'm like, I wouldn't be mad if they went that route. Like, that's a pretty significant moment in history.
I feel like, though, if Cody won it back directly from John, the fans would absolutely eat Cody alive for it. Because you heard them the whole weekend leading up to Mania and at Mania, they were booing the shit out of him. If he takes it back off of John, if he's the first guy to win it back off of John, I think the crowd turns on him.
Cody Crabb,
which
baby,
is
for
why
life.
I feel like we need to unleash the Homelander Cody. I really want to see him reach the Homelander Cody.
Cody definitely needs to be healed, but he can't be healed versus an already healed John Cena. There's got to be a hero in that story.
I don't know, but from what I read, this is the last thing we're going to say about this because we got to move on, is I think when Cody comes back, he's going to be facing Travis Scott in one way, shape, or form.
It's going to be a tag match, bro. I'm calling it right now. Cody's partner is going to be Bad Bunny. No. And it's going to be the shits.
Yeah, that sounds bad.
Bad Bunny's good, but I do not need to see Travis Scott attempt to wrestle at the level of Bad Bunny or Logan Paul. I don't.
Tag match happens, and then all of a sudden, all you hear is dun 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 dun. I'm like, oh, hell yeah.
I think Travis Scott just believes that, oh, well, if Bad Bunny and Logan Paul can do it, then I can do it too. No, bro.
It takes a certain level of natural athleticism, and you sold the crossroads because Cody threw your face in the mat whether you wanted to go there or not. That was the receipt. But, I mean, when it led up to you doing the worked punch, I was, right as I saw him throw that work punch, I was like, oh, hell no, he cannot be in a celebrity match, bro. That was a horrible work punch. That was worse than Shane McMahon's work punches. I was like,
all right,
please no.
Let's get into the tag team division, you guys. A new tag team from NXT showed up and debuted in the SmackDown main roster. Fraxium, Axiom, and what's his name? Nathan Frazier, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. They wrestled my boys, Legado del Fantasma. Poor fucking Humberto Carrillo and Angel Garza. These guys are so good, man. They're one of my favorite tag teams in the whole entire tag team division. I mean, the ladder match, which we'll get into later on, was crazy and it was exciting and it was everything that you can ever imagine and more. But if you had those guys in that ladder match, I think it would have been a little bit better. But yeah, the tag team division in SmackDown is not my cup of tea. But they're adding this new team. They're another young, hungry, high-flying, high-paced, you know, style of wrestling with Fraxium. I think, you know, they go well with the other tag teams in SmackDown, like Motor City Machine and, you know, all the other DIY, they're all like, I feel like they have similar styles except for maybe the Street Profits. Do I think they're going to add anything more to the tag team division? I don't think so, but how are you guys feeling of seeing Fraxium show up on SmackDown? Toxic, let's go with you first.
I love it. I paid attention to them in NXT. Holy shit, I'm excited to see what they cook up. I'm excited. At first, my thought was, whenever the Street Profits won the tag titles, I'm like, oh, two of the Wyatts. I want two of the Wyatts to be the Street Profits to be tag team champions. But now I changed my mind, now that Fraxium is on the SmackDown roster, because they are an amazing tag team that sometime in the near future, they are taking the tag titles from the Profits.
Nice. All right, Tommy, you're up.
Tell me this, Snug. You have seen them wrestle. It was at WWE World.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of them?
I mean, it was a really simple. They weren't doing anything crazy because it was just like a dark match for like a few fans. I mean, they weren't terrible.
But do you think that they could keep up with, say, as you put it, Motor City Machine Guns, with DIY, with the Street Profits? Like, I feel like those three who were in the ladder match that we will talk about later on, like, Fraxium absolutely, in my opinion, can keep up with those three.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Especially Motor City Machine.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah.
And at some point, as Toxic said, even if it's not via the Street Profits, they still absolutely will become tag team champions.
Mm-hmm.
They just will.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think, I mean, they're going to do something with them, I think, you know, get them closer to a tag team championship run. Yeah, no, I believe that they can definitely keep up with them, or else they wouldn't have put them up in the main roster. It's not a matter of can they keep up with them or not. I just think, like, to me, they're just very similar to Motor City Machine and DIY. It's like, what else are they going to bring? Are they going to bring anything new to the table in the tag team division? I mean, I don't know.
Under that logic, you can do the exact same thing with Legado del Fantasma and LWO.
Right, but Legado, to me, I feel like because I saw like this heel thing that they were doing down in NXT, there were like these ladies, guys, you know, Mr. Steal Your Girls, and they were handing out flowers. I feel like they just have more charisma compared to like Fraxium or DIY or Motor City Machine. They have more like a, I don't know, like more appeal to them. I don't know. I can't really explain it, but they're not really using them for that. But yeah, let's go with BT. What do you think about Fraxium?
I wasn't able to see what they did, but I did see their entrance. And I hate this. I hate this for one reason and one reason only. Let me tell you why. Raw's tag team division is suffering. But yet you put these motherfuckers on SmackDown. When are we going to do something with the Raw tag team division? Especially with the new tag team champions in the New Day. What are we supposed to do in that department? Because I'm kind of getting sick and tired of the War Raiders in New Day going at it every single fucking week. So what are we doing in that department?
I want to give a quick shout out real quick to M. Thomas. Thank you for the follow. And we're going to talk about Aleister Black in a little bit because Road Dogg is right. The pot for Aleister Black just wasn't there, and we're going to talk about that as well. Go ahead, BT.
Those are my thoughts right there. I'll leave it at that.
All righty. Mr. Blood, you're up with Fraxium coming up to Friday Night SmackDown.
I actually agree with BT on this. They should have gone to Raw. The Raw tag division has been suffering for a while, man. And I got to be honest, I'm getting real sick and tired of seeing the New Day. And I'm getting real sick and tired of seeing the War Raiders. And I love both of those teams. New Day I prefer as baby faces, but I have been a fan of the War Raiders since the beginning. I've always thought those guys had just this it factor, this it quality. And I feel like Fraxium would have better matches on Raw because that division on Raw needs more teams that I feel like they would be highlighted better because it's not such an oversaturated division on that brand. So I feel like they would stick out more because mm-hmm. if you look at the Raw division, you see just how much like the LWO falls to the wayside unless Rey himself is in a storyline. Those guys get nothing. And I mean, at the same time, I'll say it now, like I said it weeks ago when Rey Fénix debuted against Nathan Frazier, and we all thought that Nathan Frazier got way too much offense in for a debut match for what should have been a debut match for Rey Fénix was basically a double debut for both of them on the main roster. Nathan Frazier is a standout to me.
Did he wrestle again?
Rey Fénix. But they gave him way too much offense in that match, and Nathan Frazier basically took Rey Fénix nearly to the fucking limit in that match. I was like, this is supposed to be a showcase for Rey Fénix. I'm coming out of this match more impressed with Frazier. And it's the same thing with, in my opinion, it's the same thing with tonight. I continue to be mostly impressed with Frazier. When I look at Frazier, I see a 2014 Seth Rollins. There's something about the style he reminds me of 11 years younger Seth, and I really like his mat style. I like, there's something about him that it's indie, but it's also WWE polished. I really feel like Shawn Michaels has done a great job with this guy. And I look at Axiom, whom we watched, you know, give Gunther the work a couple of weeks ago. And I'm like, okay, we got a strong team here. I'm glad they're a team. I think they're incredible. I think that they definitely have a shot at being champions here on SmackDown. But I just wish they had a shot at being champions on Raw. That being said, massively impressed with them. And I love MCMG. I've been a fan of Motor City Machine Guns for 20 years since I met them at TNA and got their autographs. But I've also been a massive proponent saying that I've been wanting the fucking Street Profits to have their moment for months, because I feel like they've been squandered forever. But if we're having a new team come up, then maybe the brands, the draft is going to be a blessing, because maybe we're going to get a shakeup in both brands' divisions here, and maybe they're going to evenly split these fucking teams finally. So we'll have to wait and see. But glad to have them up. Just, in my opinion, the wrong brand.
Toxic.
Blood. The reason why Frazier is mostly like Seth Rollins is because Nathan Frazier was actually trained by Seth Rollins. That's his mentor. Seth Rollins is Frazier's,
you know,
mentor.
What? I actually knew that and forgot that I knew that, because I think we talked about that several weeks ago.
We did.
Yeah, it was also, they also mentioned it during the double debut with Rey Fénix and Frazier.
Yeah, you are correct. Thank you.
Guys, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but after, you know, this whole thing with the tag team division, not just on Raw and SmackDown, I kind of want to see more of the Pretty Deadly. I had never thought I would say
agree.
That.
You know what? I completely agree. And I think I said this in December. I think Pretty Deadly, I don't think you need to change anything about their presentation. They remind me of like Elton John, kind of mixed with like the Beatles, with a little bit of hair metal, you know, but like British, you know what I mean? And I've always said,
what up, Scorpion? Shout out to Scorpion Dream. Sorry, go ahead.
But no, you're good. But I've always said that I think that they are probably the most, in my opinion, even more than Legado del Fantasma, and even more than the LWO, I feel like Pretty Deadly are legit the one team that is not getting their time to shine, even more than the Street Profits. Because they only put Pretty Deadly on the card or on the roster on TV when they need them to be backup to Nia Jax, when they need them to be comedy fodder, when they need them to just fill a commercial.
Well, the past couple of weeks, the Pretty Deadly have been a little bit more serious now. Like they're not their usually goofy self.
And that's fine. But like, if we remember about even 9 months ago, they were on TV every week wrestling. Like 9-10 months ago, they were, this time last year, they were featured heavily. They had the whole Elton John came back from the arm shoulder thing, remember, storyline, and they were shooting all those freaking vignettes of them out at like the lake and yes boy. Like, I love those guys. I genuinely hope that when we get the draft, they put these guys on the Netflix Raw and then give these guys the spotlight on the flagship show, because I'm with you. Pretty Deadly needs a light shining. These guys are charismatic as hell and they can fucking wrestle, bro. So hey, I'm with you.
At least they got a gimmick, unlike some of the other tag teams on SmackDown.
They're unique. They really stand out because their gimmick is unlike anything else that's on the roster. They stand out.
All right, let's go on over to what we saw with Tiffany Stratton really quick, because an unexpected Jade Cargill showed up to interfere, and I was thinking, wow, like, I know Jade Cargill just won at WrestleMania, but she's going straight to the top, huh? After her big win at WrestleMania, she's not wasting any time. Jade Cargill stepped up to Tiffany Stratton, and I was like, man, are we really about to get this match, like, no build on a regular Friday night SmackDown? And we did. They had a a singles match that went through, I believe, two commercial breaks, if I'm not mistaken. So it was at least a 10, 15-minute match, and Jade Cargill didn't look half bad. I mean, she wasn't the greatest. She wasn't perfect, but I think Jade Cargill is improving. She pretty much held her own versus Tiffany Stratton, who was the main champion in the women's division on SmackDown. And I wasn't also mad about the finish because I'm thinking, like, man, like, it would kind of suck if Jade Cargill gets beat. I know it's Tiffany Stratton, but I'm like, they can't beat Jade Cargill this soon after winning at WrestleMania. And lo and behold, Naomi shows up, attacks Jade Cargill. Tiffany Stratton gets disqualified, and then Nia Jax returns. So I think this finish is going to leave us with that. You know, I think this is a start of something bigger between Jade Cargill and Tiffany Stratton. I think we're going to get another match out of these two. I don't think it's going to be at Backlash. I think it's too soon, but I think this was a great way to show the WWE universe, like, hey, this is, you know, Jade Cargill. She's going to be up there in that main title picture. Get used to seeing this. At least that's how I saw it. But Tommy, let's go with you first. What were your thoughts about this whole thing with Tiffany Stratton, Jade Cargill, Naomi still coming after Jade, and Nia Jax coming back?
It's good to see Nia Jax back. As much as I hate saying that, because I hate her ass so much, it is good to see her back. We have not seen her since a little bit after Tiffany Stratton cashed in. But the one person I hate more is the girl that thinks she's fucking scary when she's not at all. I get it. You have issues with Jade, but Naomi, girl, let him have the damn match. And the fact that later on in the show, there was that backstage segment where her and Nia Jax were talking, and Naomi just goes, "As long as you proceed with caution." I'm like, girl, you act like you're scared, like you're scary, but you're not. You're really not. You are barely passing as a heel at all. Like, barely. Because yeah, people still know you as Glow. Like, many people are not falling for this whole caution tape all over yourself, razor blades all up in your hair, like she's been having as of recently. It just needs to stop with her.
Yeah, I haven't been the biggest fan of Naomi with all this either. Quick shout out to David Babel. Says, after tonight, I really question WWE creative not putting that TLC tag team match at WrestleMania. We'll get into that as we get closer to the main event.
I do agree as well that at some point, these two will have a full-on match. But first, I think a tag match is coming. Jade and Tiffany versus Nia and Naomi.
Holy shit, that didn't even cross my mind. But yeah, you're right, Tommy. We could probably see that next week. Or maybe at Backlash.
So.
Yeah, very, very true. All right, BT, you're up.
I did manage to catch this segment. Is it me, or does Jade sound a bit green on the mic? She sounds a bit green to me on the mic. Like, she came off very passionate, but she still sounds a bit... What's the word I'm looking for? Blood, do you think you can help me out? I think I'm trying to look for a word here.
She doesn't sound confident enough.
Right. Yeah. She came off as passionate.
Sounds like false confident.
Yeah. 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 Thanks for that. Tiffany Stratton as well. She sounds too much of a heel on the fucking mic. As much as she wants to be a babyface, she's too much. Her personality sorts out too much of a heel. And it's been evident ever since the Charlotte Flair situation. Not only that, ever since she won the fucking title, she has acted so much like a heel. And Nia Jax seems to be the babyface in that situation. As much as we hate her, Nia Jax appears to be the babyface that we just want to fucking boot. You know what I mean? But anyway, I didn't catch any of the match, but I did see the people that interfered. I'm happy that Nia Jax is back, finally being able to do something and capitalizing off of the cash-in, which unfortunately we didn't get to do a lot the first time, because they just put them straight into a tag team match with Trish Stratus and Candice LeRae. And Naomi comes back. Girl, why the fuck did you have to beat Jade so freaking, I don't know the word. You looked like
it was
you
a very bad
on.
Attack.
You looked like you were turned on when you were beating the crap out of Naomi.
She I was
mean, Jade.
She was.
You looked like she was passionate trying to get in, and then
she was dry humping her. She was dry humping
yes,
her.
Exactly.
That's what she was doing.
Like, it was fucking creepy. I'm like, why the fuck are you so turned on beating the crap out of this woman? It was fucking creepy.
No, it looked like Naomi was dancing on Jade Cargill during that.
That's how we get down in Florida. That's how we get down in Florida.
I bet you do, you sick freak.
Naomi's from Orlando, Jade's from Vero Beach. That's how we get down in Florida.
Yeah, okay. Bruh.
You mess with the bump, you're going to get the hump.
But overall, Naomi as a heel, I don't mind it. It's not the best, but... yeah, she doesn't come off scary at all. She just sounds a bit demented and a bit fucked in the head, a bit screw loose. but I enjoyed the segment overall.
Well, BT, if you think Jade Cargill is green on the mic, you should check out some of her promos in AEW. I think the Jade Cargill we have now, as far as mic skills, and have gotten a lot better over time.
The only promo that I remember Jade Cargill in is the one where Cody's wife pops in. Who told you tonight was open mic night, bitch?
Oh my god, yeah, that was brutal. What else was I gonna say? Yeah. But yeah, Naomi, oh man, she didn't really want to hit Jade Cargill, but you can obviously tell when Naomi ran in the ring tonight, it was just so bad. The attack, the punches, it just looked like Naomi was just got on top of Jade Cargill and she was just grinding on her, fucking dry humping her, like not even punching her. And it was just some weird shit. I got the clip on my Instagram if anyone wants to go back and see it. It was pretty bad. All right, Mr. Bled, take us home with this one. When it comes to this women's match,
well, Toxic didn't need to go yet, so Toxic.
No, Toxic is last this time.
But how do I put this? I'm not into any of it. Also, damn, pardon me, that was a 10 out of 10. Really glad to see that they brought Nia Jax back, and I don't have to look at Candice LeRae. So as far as it's concerned, I don't like this for one very specific reason, and I think maybe you guys will see where I'm coming from. I don't have a problem with Naomi's heel turn. I actually like that they're having her do something different after all these years of being a face. Because I mean, I'm talking, we go back to Total Divas and Funkadactyl days, But I just wish they wouldn't give her the catchphrase, proceed with caution. Anybody else felt like that was a line that Vince McMahon would have written to end a segment? Here's the thing. You had Bianca in a segment, right? Talking, I think it was Adam Pearce, if I remember correctly. And she's like, Nick Aldis maybe, but she's like, I have unfinished business on SmackDown. It's like, well, that would have been great if you had come to finish this business 2 months ago. Because now kind of don't give a shit. Little too late. You shouldn't have been focused on Elimination Chamber. You should have been on SmackDown handling your business. Now I'm supposed to care? But the biggest crux I have with this whole problem, so let me gather my thought here. The quickest problem I have with everything. I don't buy Tiffany Stratton as the champion. And I don't buy Jade as a major babyface. And I'll tell you why. Tiffany Stratton is way too green, in my opinion, still, for the main roster. I think they pushed her way too fast. I think they brought her up too fast. She was on NXT for a cup of coffee, and then she's been on the main roster for less than a year, and she's already champion. We saw how that match went down at Mania, and the entire time I watched the match, all I could think was, Tiffany is blown up, she's gassed the majority of the match, and Charlotte is carrying her through most of these spots. I've watched that match back twice now. It's so clear to me. I'm watching Charlotte call out spots to her and getting frustrated because she's not listening. And Tiffany messed up like five different setups and sequences in that Mania match.
She messed up a lot tonight too.
Yeah, she's too green. And for me, when I think of my champion, I think of my champion as being a well-polished professional wrestler who knows who they are in the ring and on the mic. And on the mic, she has no idea who she is because this is the most forced baby face turn I've seen in a while. It's not horrible, but the girl is a natural heel. And they are literally trying to force baby face material on her. And just when she opens her mouth, just the sound of her voice sounds heel. Because she sounds like a mean girl. And I can't buy it. And that's the same problem I have with Jade. Jade is still too green. She's still too green on the mic. She's much better than AEW. No contest. But that's because she had someone like Jade to ride with and absorb things with for months and months and months, which we all know is the reason they put Jade with her. Bianca with her was so she could have another powerful, strong black woman in the business show her how to be the next strong, powerful black woman babyface in the business. Because that's how WWE does things. They pair you with the person they want you to emulate. And when you look at Bianca, well-polished, knows how to go on the mic, can go in the ring. She is a ring general. Ring psychology is fucking second to none. And then you still think after all these months she's been with Bianca, like 7 months at this point, 7, 8 she was with Bianca, she still can't come across correctly on the mic in a confident way. She's still messing up spots in the ring, too slow to remember her sequences. She feels like she's getting stage fright halfway through her matches every single time she wrestles. Every time. It feels like she's got stage fright. And I understand getting jitters for your matches and being overexcited, but there comes a point where you have got to lock in if you want to do this, you've got to shake the cobwebs off. And you got to get in there and you got to wrestle at least one match that goes longer than 9 minutes that doesn't have a fucking mistake, a botch, a screw up, or a timing problem. Once. You got to do it once. And I have never seen her get through one match longer than 9 minutes where she hasn't messed up. And she's been with the company for over a year now.
Who, Jade or Tiffany?
Jade. Okay. Jade. Tiffany has been with the company for longer than Jade and she is still making rookie mistakes. And I'm not trying to be overly critical, but I'm because I understand no one's perfect and people make mistakes. But I can't sit there and look at you as a dominant, competent champion or a dominant, competent challenger when neither one of you look like you even seem confident when I'm watching you on TV. You look like you're trying to play confident people, and really you're still nervous and you're still trying to figure it out. And that's okay. But I can't buy Jade as the next mega baby-faced woman on the woman's roster because I know they want to make her the face of the women's roster at some point. That's very evident. And I know they want Tiffany to be the face of the women's entire division for the next generation as well. They want two, like they've always had Charlotte and Becky. But these girls are not ready. And that, and week after week, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm sorry. But in my opinion, week after week, these girls are showing us that they're just not ready yet and they need more time. And so I don't want to see this. I don't want to see a one-on-one match with these guys on a main PLE. I don't want to see tag match turmoil. I mean, and I know they're going to throw Bianca back into this shit. And I got a massive feeling they're going to turn Bianca heel here shortly because of the reaction she was getting in the previous program she was just in. But I don't care about any of this because I'm not buying in. It's hard to buy in, so it's hard to care. Does that make sense?
Maybe it's just me because I'm rooting for Jade. I want her to get better. And, you know, I do believe that she is going to be champion one day. And maybe that's why. But to me, Jade Cargill looked a lot better than Tiffany Stratton in their match tonight.
I believe in Jade. I want Jade to succeed. I want Tiffany to succeed. I want these girls to be better than Charlotte and Becky ever were. I want them to be better than any of the... I want the next generation to be insane. But they are not there. And I don't think they're close to being there. I think they're getting better in many areas, but it feels like the better they get in one area, the worse they're getting in another.
Toxic, what do you think about this?
Sorry about that. Me, Tommy, and BT were making a little joke. Okay, so for me, I'm liking what I see out of both Jade and Tiffany, but they just need a lot of work. And with Naomi and Nia, I don't know why, but I get this feeling so much that at Backlash, it's going to be a fatal four-way for the women's championship that Tiffany has. I don't know what it's called.
I think it's just the WWE Women's Championship.
Yeah, probably that.
Yeah.
But I think we're probably at Backlash, we're getting a fatal four-way. Nia Jax, Naomi, Tiffany Stratton, and Jade Cargill. I have that feeling.
All right, well, enough about that. Let's go on over and talk about some United States championship business. Jacob Fatu came out to do his big celebration after winning the United States champion, and this dude came out wearing a fucking beanie, a fucking 3X large Raiders jersey with the U.S. title wrapped around his neck, looking like a straight gangster right out of the fucking Bay Area, which he is, by the way. That's our new United States champion. And it's just like, it's just crazy to me that the fact that Jacob Fatu, he not just in the WWE, but United States champion, you know, it's, I'm not used to seeing that yet, you know, but I'm excited. It's good to see something different, someone as unique as Jacob Fatu, you know, be the United States champion in the WWE. It's just like, damn, I still can't believe it. But he had an interesting confrontation with Solo Sikoa. Solo Sikoa was trying to take all the credit for Jacob Fatu being in the WWE, winning the United States champion. And Jacob Fatu was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I told you I was going to do this. I told you that I was going to do it with or without you. So they got a little bit heated, Solo and Jacob Fatu. A lot of people are saying Solo is going to turn on Jacob. But the crazy thing about all this, I was kind of expecting LA Knight to come out, but Drew McIntyre came out. Drew McIntyre is putting himself in that United States title picture, which is amazing. And wherever Drew McIntyre is, Damian Priest is not that far along. So we saw all, what is it, five guys? LA, Solo, Jacob, all five of these guys in that United States title picture with Jacob Fatu, it's getting very interesting. This scenery that we saw today with that championship belt. But who's first? I believe we are with who went first last time? Tommy? BT, I think you're up. Go ahead, BT.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Snug. Let's get into this. I did manage to see this segment. I saw the clips of it. Was so excited about it. First off, let's talk about Jacob Fatu. Actually, let's talk about Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu, both of them. First off, Solo Sikoa, no disrespect, Snug, but he's a piece of shit for what he did. He's a piece of shit for taking credit for what Jacob did. You know this. You know this. Jacob, he is a heel, but he is over as fuck. His aura level is at a billion right now. These motherfuckers in the crowd were all chanting, "He's all gas, no brakes with it." Know what I mean? Two, and then at that second, LA Knight's music hit, and I lost my shit. But I was not expecting Drew McIntyre to come out. Drew versus Jacob? What a fucking banger that would be. But fucking LA Knight doing the CM Punk laying on the top ropes. Oh, please wake me up and please wake me up and let me know when this fool is done talking his bullshit. And then the line that pissed me off from Drew McIntyre. The only joke around here is your last US title run. He is right. He's right. As much as I hate him for it, he's right. Because he shouldn't have lost it to Shinsuke in the first place. He should have held it to WrestleMania to then lose it to Jacob Fatu. Fuck me. He was right. They fumbled so fucking big in that area, and he only held it for a month. But then, the best line, and I geeked out. He said, "I would say that your last title run was a joke, but I hardly remember it." Damn. Because it only lasted 5 minutes, motherfucker. So there's your own pill to swallow.
Oh,
but God, overall, man, this segment was fucking awesome. From Drew and LA Knight having the match that I felt like we should have gotten at WrestleMania, but the direction they went with Drew and Damian was fucking perfect. And Jacob Fatu fully deserves that US title. But having Damian Priest come out and cost Drew, I thought that was awesome. And absolute, my personal taste of a segment, 10 out of 10. I fully enjoyed it, but Drew was right. His last US title run was a joke. They shouldn't have fucking put it on Shinsuke if they weren't going to do anything with him. But thank you, LA Knight, for saying that you don't even remember Drew's last run with the title, because it only lasted 5 minutes. Calm as a bitch.